Good morning, everyone. And welcome to the 2019 Washington Council of the Blind State Convention. Are we live with ACB Radio?
We should be.
Okay. So let's just give a hearty welcome to all those people out there on ACB Radio listening to us today. You guys are good. You're keeping up the Washington tradition. For those of you who don't know, at ACB, Washington is known as the loud group. Seahawks. No, they lost last week. I'm not going to cheer for them. All right. Is Sydney in the room?
Yes.
All right. So, leading in the flag salute this morning, leading us in the flag salute this morning is Sydney Eggers. Sydney is a sixth grader from the 10th Street Middle School, and Haley's wonderful, helpful, very mature daughter. Will you all stand for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, and with liberty and justice for all.
To present our invocation this morning, I'd like to introduce Antoinette Jackson. She is a minister and is going to do our invocation. Antoinette.
That's weird. I know. Good morning, everybody. We're just going to pray and then enjoy the rest of your day. So, God, we just come to you today and we thank you. We thank you for your anointing upon this service. We thank you, Father God, for the theme, community. And we thank you for the communities that are open and the doors that are open and the blessings that are bestowed upon us, God. We thank you, Father, for all that you're doing, for waking us up this morning, for leading us on our way. We thank you for everything that will be done here today. We thank you for it will fall on good ground and that they will see results for all that go on. We give you all praise and all glory. And everyone that's in agreement, say amen.
Amen.
Microphone is very strange. It's tilting downwards. To give us our welcome this morning from the city of SeaTac, I'd like to introduce Clyde Hill, who is the deputy mayor for the city of SeaTac, and he just informed me he is Steve Fixdall's brother-in-law.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dear members of the Washington Council of the Blind, it is a great honor and a privilege that I am presented with the opportunity to welcome all of you to the city of SeaTac, the city where everywhere is possible. We thank you for bringing your conference to our city and for your attendance. We are community. Is a wonderful theme for this year's conference. Building communities of inclusion means cultivating an environment free from unlawful discrimination and harassment. In SeaTac, we aspire to do more than just that. More than simply tolerating our differences, we embrace and welcome them. Here in the city of SeaTac, we strive to serve our diverse community with respect and compassion. We are excited by the advancements in technology, providing us with better tools for communication and outreach to our residents and for improving mobility for citizens with specific needs. Later in the program, you will be discussing ways to ensure that you are included in the 2020 census. It is important to SeaTac and to all communities that all of our people are counted, and we encourage your participation. An accurate census helps ensure fair representation at all levels of government. I would like to share a little about the SeaTac community. We became a city in 1990 and will be celebrating 30 years of incorporation in February 2020. Thank you. We are approximately 10.5 square miles in area and have a population of over 29,000 residents. The SeaTac International Airport, owned and operated by the Port of Seattle, is wholly located within our city boundaries. We have the Puget Sound region's largest concentration of hotels and motels, with the exception of downtown Seattle. SeaTac is home to over 5,500 guest rooms and thousands of visitors each year. When combining the number of traveling guests, visitors, and employees to our area, the population counts in our city averages over 170,000 individuals at any given time throughout the day. In our city, we have two light rail stations connecting SeaTac to Seattle. We are proud to be the portal to Puget Sound, to the Puget Sound region, and light rail has enhanced our connection to the greater Puget Sound area. During your stay, we hope you'll have an opportunity to experience our many fine restaurants and visit Angle Lake Park, Valley Ridge Park, North SeaTac Park, our community center, the beautiful Highline SeaTac Botanical Garden, and the tranquil Japanese Garden, or perhaps take a leisurely walk along the Des Moines Creek Trail. We strive to make our city a premier global community, offering a solid, sustainable economy and a healthy, inclusive, and vibrant quality of life. We are confident that you will enjoy your time in SeaTac and will find the people that live and work here to be friendly and welcoming. So again, thank you for coming to the fine city of SeaTac. Have a good day.
And he even got it right. He said Washington Council of the Blind. Is Kathy in the room? Oh. All right, let's do I Bet You. Cindy has announcements. Yes.
We need a listening device over here.
Yeah.
Do we have the ADLs?
Yeah,
the ADLs
over here.
The ADLs are up here at the front table.
Coming, Cindy.
Okay.
Here we are.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Are you having a good time? And the food was good, wasn't it? Breakfast? Good breakfast? Okay. A couple of things that I just want to share with you. One, thank you for wearing your name tags. Very important. If somebody comes up to you and says you don't have a name tag on, you need to go put it on. Please don't give them a hard time and just go take care of it, okay? This is just what we need to do to make sure that we know who's here. We're responsible. There's a sense of responsibility for everybody that registers for our convention. And we need to know when there's people that aren't registered with our convention. And you guys all paid good money to be here, right? So that's we don't need any party crashers, right? So, all right. Lunch will be in Grand 2. That's our awards luncheon. So it'll be in Grand 2, which is where the general breakfast was. And if you did not go to that breakfast, it's right next door to this room. So you just pass this room and go to the next room. Exhibits opens at 10 a.m. and will go till 5 p.m., closed at noon for that hour. And it's in Grand 3, which is continuing down this hallway with the Grand Ballroom to your left. If you need to use the restroom, if you leave this room and turn left and you go just past Grand 2, there will be a hallway that shoots off to the right. So turn right, and the bathrooms will come up on your left. I believe it goes men's, then women's. Okay. Let's see. We will, of course, have hospitality tonight in Cascade 9 and 10. And I will work on making sure that the bar stays open a little bit longer tonight and tomorrow night. I know it kind of closed early last night, right? But it worked out well. Did everybody do fine with the way that was set up as far as the bar goes? It all worked good? Yes? Okay. $5 a drink, and they are able to even take credit cards. So,
good thing.
Let's see. Everybody's on their own for dinner for Friday night. If you signed up to have dinner with the guide dog users, you'll want to meet near the entrance of Seaport at 5 a.m. You missed it. No, at 5 p.m. And that's a large group, so you'll want to get there on time. Just a side note, if you are a coffee drinker, if you go to the espresso bar marketplace, and if you buy an automatic drip coffee, it is refillable. So you can refill it throughout the day for one price. So that's kind of a nice deal. So I just want you guys to be aware of that. If you head towards the lobby, you'll hear it on your left. It's just past the entrance of Seaport and the bar. It's on the left. It's counter. It's like a setup like Starbucks. So they sell sandwiches and pastries and candy bars and, you know, what have you, and coffee and espressos. So, and juices and, you know, all of those things. Let's see. Relieving area, please, you know, should not have to remind people to do this, but handlers, please pick up after your dogs. It's not kind to any of us that go out there with our dogs. None of us can see or see well. And, you know, we don't want to step in it either. So please do pick up after your dog. They do have bags above the garbage can. They are like regular garbage bags. But if you are in a pinch and don't have a bag, they will work, so use it. Let me think if there's anything else that was on my radar. If you are here just for the day and are registered with the convention but are not staying overnight, please come either find me. Yeah, find me, and I will give you a passing, a $10 parking pass so that you don't need to pay full price for parking. And I think that's all I've got, I think, I hope. breakout sessions, enjoy them, you guys. Try to go to the ones you signed up for, but if you changed your mind, you know, it's okay. Door prizes will start as soon as probably at the end of our first session this morning before break. And maybe after break. I know Shannon is ready with door prizes and has all the names. So who wants a door prize? See, I knew. And you guys are awake this morning, so that's good. So, all right. Denise, that's it, unless somebody has a burning question.
Yes.
Oh. Is it an announcement about convention, Josette? Because we're not going to do personal announcements right now.
We'll get you. I'll get you later.
All right. Any questions about convention itself, the hotel, anything like that? The marketplace?
Hours.
Hours. It starts at 5 a.m. and goes to 8 p.m. So it almost accommodates all day for Frank. I know he's happy, right, Frank? Yeah.
Get a microphone to Nathan.
All right, coming.
You folks who have guide dogs, in case you don't know this, I found it out last night. When you go out and it's at nighttime when the door is locked, if you use your key on the left-hand side, once you slide it in there, you need to kind of move around at the door because there's a sensor that lets you, that opens the door. Otherwise, it won't open. So want to make sure you kind of move around a little bit, kind of go back and forth in front of the door so it sees you to open the door.
Okay, coming.
Thank you, though, for bringing that up. That's good. And if you just step back, once you hear the click and you step back, it will probably pick up on it. But the other thing is, if you have to go out in the middle of the night, you know, we are in SeaTac, and if you're not feeling safe, the number I gave last night, and I'm going to give it again today, the text number for the hotel, you can text the hotel and ask if somebody from security could meet you at the elevators on the lobby level and go outside with you during the night. So the number, this is for you to use if you need something in your room, the toilet's overflowed, you need an extra blanket, you know, any of those kinds of things, right? So the number is 206, I got that right this time, guys, 206-693-4311, and boy, they are responsive. So that's it, Denise. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. To give us this morning the welcome from our host chapter, I introduce to you Kathy Wilson, who's president of the president of the Pierce County Association of the Blind.
No, you'll have to come up here.
Okay.
And that microphone is really weird.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm coming this way?
No, right here.
To your left?
Yeah.
Oh, it's right here. Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. And the microphone is, oh, it's on here?
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Well, welcome, welcome. Pierce County Association of the Blind. We welcome everybody to the WCB conference. Those of you who don't know a lot about us, but I'm sure most of you do, Pierce PCAB has been around since 1934. Back in the day, they had a lot of involvement with the White Cane Law. And today, we are still continually fundraising, and our biggest thing, you know, our thing today is we are community, and that's one of our things at Pierce County Association of the Blind. We want to get the word out who we are as a community and get the community involved in everything that we do. So, are you guys going to have a good time?
Yeah.
So one more thing. So, does everybody know what the WCB theme is this year? Okay, 1, 2, 3, and we start off with WBC, and then we say the next part. You ready? 1, 2, 3. WCB, we are community. So you guys have a wonderful time and welcome.
Thank you.
Well, if that doesn't get you going, nothing will. Oh, this microphone is so strange. I'd like to take a few moments to share some thoughts with you about this year and about our theme, because I think it's really important. Good morning to all of you here at the convention and to those of you listening out there on ACB Radio. It is again a true honor for me to come before you for my second and last report as your president. A couple of months ago, I made the decision to choose to not run for a second term for a lot of reasons. Our theme this year is We Are Community, And being a part of this community has never meant more to me than it has this year. Due to unforeseen circumstances in my personal life with my husband and what's going on with him, so many of you have stepped up and taken the helm when needed. As was the case in 2018, it has been a year full of phone calls, full of committee meetings, emails, and a lot of collaboration and decision making. Whether you're here at the DoubleTree, attending the convention in person, or listening on ACB Radio, you are all part of our dynamic community. I looked up the word community and learned that one of the definitions of community is a feeling of fellowship with others as a result of sharing common attitudes, interests, and goals. And isn't that what ACB, or WCB, well, ACB too, is all about?
Yes.
I thought it would be interesting to look back at some of our history to remind ourselves of the many ways we work together as a community to accomplish a major goal. The passage of a major civil rights bill for blind and visually impaired people in this state called the White Cane Law. It was passed in 1969 and is still a state law over 50 years later. We were there. The success of the organization in getting legislation passed to allow blind people to serve on juries and to be able to obtain automobile insurance without being charged a higher rate. We were there. The establishment of the Washington State Commission for the Blind in 1977, bringing an end to the tireless labor by blind Washingtonians. We were there. The establishment of the Department of Services for the Blind in 1982, preserving the separate status of our agency, but allowing the governor to appoint the director. And we were there. The hard work we all did to get the Braille bill passed in this state, which now allows blind children, blind and visually impaired children, who really need to learn Braille, the opportunity to do so. Yes. And we were there. The work we've done with the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library to ensure that it remained under the Secretary of State's office and didn't get swallowed up somewhere else, we were there. The work we did with Department of Services for the Blind to ensure that it didn't go back under the Department of Social and Health Services, we were there. And finally, the work we've done with the Washington State School for the Blind so that it didn't get combined again with the Washington State School for the Deaf, and we were there. The passage of the Help America Vote Act and all the work that was done in this state to ensure accessible voting, private accessible voting, and we were there. And so you see, we are a community. We are all part of a community. We all work together as a community. And so I thought the theme was so appropriate in thinking about WCB and where WCB has been. It's been kind of a quiet year in some ways because I wasn't able to do all the things I really wanted to do. I had a whole bunch of things floating around in my head. But as I said earlier, circumstances have made me have to sort of step back and reprioritize. But WCB is always going to be my first love. I want to acknowledge the great participation and support from so many of you at the local chapter and special interest affiliate levels, as well as those of you serving on committees dealing with the issues impacting all of us. Without all of your efforts, there would be no Washington Council of the Blind. I've enjoyed participating on many of your committee calls and hearing about the goals and great work that you are accomplishing. I also want to recognize and thank the 11 other members of the WCB board. They have kept me on track with overseeing all facets of the day-to-day operation of a successful organization. I just think that you know, WCB has done so much. We're an organization with a lot of potential. However, to achieve this potential will require the efforts of many more of us. As I said last night, sometimes it feels like 20% of the people are doing 80% of the work. And that seems to be a trend right now in this country. But we need more than the 20%. We need everybody stepping up and being a part of this great organization and being a part of this community. As I've said many times before, WCB is not just about the officers and directors. It is not only when we all do our small part that we're going to continue to grow and to thrive. And that is my hope for WCB, and that is my wish for WCB. Thank you, all of you, for everything that you do. Oops. Okay, change direction here. We're now going to hear the report from the nominating committee. And before I introduce the chair, I just want to say the nominating committee is going to give us the slate of office of candidates who have been selected to run for the various offices that are open. Once they have given their report, I will ask if anyone else wants to declare their intention to run from the floor. And you don't, you know, also tell me, you know, is it a board member, on the board, one of the officers, what is your intention? You want to remember that if you are running from the floor, and this applies also to those coming out of nominating, you need to have your speakers ready to speak for you tomorrow afternoon at the business meeting. Do not ask somebody at the very last minute. That's not, you know, you're not going to get a good speaker that way. And often, good speakers help people get elected. So make sure you've asked people to speak for you. Also, do not nominate somebody from the floor unless you've talked to them first. That just slows down the process, and we want to get through everything. So now to give you the report from the nominating committee, I give you Frank Cuda, nominating committee chair.
And thank you to the other committee members, Cindy Van Winkle and Jim Turi. Coming out of nominated committee, we have for president, Julie Brannon. For first vice president, Mika White. Treasurer, Lisa George. And the board positions, oh, by the way, these are all for two-year terms. Sherry Richardson, Lori Allison, Nathan Brannon. And for the fourth position, which is to fill out the term of Julie Brannon, will be just a one-year term. We're recommending Kim Moberg. Thank you.
So that is the slate of candidates coming out of nominating. Is there anyone who wishes to declare their intention to run from the floor?
Madam President.
Yes. No, we aren't going to do nominating right now. The candidate needs to declare their intention to run.
Madam President.
All right, Danette. And for the board?
Madam President.
Hold on just a sec, Jenny. For the board, Danette?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Jenny?
I'm declaring my candidacy.
For the board?
Yes.
All right. Anyone else? Okay. For the board? Okay. Anyone else?
Holly Turi is at the volunteer desk, but she wants to run.
We love you, Holly. All right, so Danette Dixon, Jenny Anderson, J.R. Kinnison, and Holly Turi have all declared their intention to run from the floor. Is there anyone else? Okay, so it should be an interesting election tomorrow. All right, now wearing his other hat.
There's a hand up.
Yes. Get a mic.
Yes.
Poor Bruce. We're going to get Bruce roller skates. No, I think we should get him a skateboard. That would even be better.
I was a little late, so if I'm, this has already been announced, so I'm going to have egg on my face, but I wondered if it was mentioned again that Ira is available here in the hotel to help people for the convention.
No, it hasn't. Thank you, Rich. Okay. Okay, so to present to us the first reading of the proposed amendments to the WCB Constitution and Bylaws, I again give you Frank Cuda, Chair of our Constitution and Bylaws Committee.
Thank you, and this will be a little shorter than last year, so you can applaud for that.
Yay.
We have three proposed amendments coming to us. These are all coming from the Finance Committee. And they have been discussed and debated quite a bit already, but we will, of course, discuss them again on the floor tomorrow afternoon. This is just a reading, and I present to you Lisa George.
Okay, Amendment 2019-1. This amendment changes the selection and approval of financial institutions, the authorized signatories on accounts, and the process and method of payments. Existing language, Article 11, disbursement of funds. The funds of this organization shall be deposited in a bank to be selected by the treasurer with the approval of the president. The president's signature shall be on record with the bank or banks. All financial obligations of this organization shall be discharged by check issued on order of the president, transacted by the treasurer, and signed by the treasurer or an agent selected by the board. In the event of dissolution, all assets of this organization shall be given to an organization with similar purposes, which has received a Section 501(c)(3) certification by the Internal Revenue Service. Proposed language, Article 11, disbursement of funds. The monetary assets of this organization shall be deposited in one or more financial institutions selected by the treasurer and approved by the WCB Board of Directors. Each account shall have the president, the treasurer, and the immediate past president as signatories. An agent selected by the board, such as a bookkeeper, may also be allowed as a signatory. The normal financial obligations of this organization shall be discharged as necessary via check or electronic payment within the limits of the current operations budget approved by the membership. In the event of dissolution, all assets of this organization shall be given to an organization with similar purposes, which has received a Section 501(c)(3) certification by the Internal Revenue Service. Amendment 2019-2. This amendment requires new affiliates to be registered in the state of Washington and all affiliates to maintain an active status as a nonprofit. Existing language, Article 4, Affiliates, Section 1, Application for Affiliation. Any local chapter or special interest group desiring to become an affiliate of this organization shall apply for affiliation by electronically submitting to the WCB president a copy of its constitution, all required membership data in the WCB approved format, and a list of elected officers and board members. Both an existing organizational bank account and a minimum of 10 dues-paying members are required to be considered for affiliation. No change to the remaining language in the article. In this section, I'm sorry. Section 2, affiliate responsibilities. There's no change to the language in the first three paragraphs of this section. No group shall be accepted as an affiliate, and no group shall remain an affiliate unless at least a majority of its voting members are legally blind. The president, vice presidents, and at least a majority of the elected committee or board of directors of each affiliate must be legally blind. The president of this organization shall be an ex officio member of each affiliate. Proposed language, Article 4, Affiliates, Section 1, Application for Affiliation. Any local chapter or special interest group desiring to become an affiliate of this organization shall apply for affiliation by electronically submitting to the WCB president a copy of its constitution, all required membership data in the WCB approved format, the UBI number and optional Washington Charities registration number, and a list of elected officers and board members. Both an existing organizational bank account and a minimum of 10 dues-paying members are required to be considered for affiliation. Section 2, Affiliate Responsibilities. No group shall be accepted as an affiliate, and no group shall remain an affiliate unless at least a majority of its voting members are legally blind. The president, vice presidents, and at least a majority of the elected committee or board of directors of each affiliate must be legally blind. The affiliate must maintain an active status as a Washington nonprofit corporation. The president of this organization shall be an ex officio member of each affiliate. Amendment 2019-3. This amendment holds the board accountable to the approved budget, allowing changes only under extraordinary circumstances, and simplifies the grant process. Existing language. I, finance, members of this committee are responsible for developing the annual budget, analyzing all grant requests received, monitoring WCB's financial investments, and recommending changes in investment strategy when appropriate. Number one, the proposed WCB annual budget must be presented at the pre-convention board meeting and passed by a majority vote at the business meeting of the general membership. Budget line items approved by the convention may be adjusted by the board of directors between conventions. Number two, all grant requests received by WCB and analyzed must then be reported to the board for action with a do pass, do not pass, or no recommendation. Grant requests must be submitted in writing using the WCB grant application form and will be awarded primarily to 501c3 organizations and governmental entities. Grants or parts of grants will not be awarded by WCB to fund salaries or to supplant other funding. Three, any motion coming before the WCB board to allocate award or grant funds that has not first been reviewed by the Finance Committee shall require a unanimous affirmative vote of all board members present and voting to pass. Proposed language, I, finance. Members of this committee are responsible for developing the annual budget, analyzing all grant requests received, monitoring WCB's financial investments, and recommending changes in investment strategy when appropriate. Number one, the proposed WCB annual operations budget must be presented at the pre-convention board meeting for approval by the board. This approved budget is then presented to the general membership at the annual business meeting to be considered for adoption with a majority vote. Budgeted funds adopted by the convention may be adjusted by the board of directors between individual line items. Only under extraordinary circumstances may the board increase the budget, and only with unanimous approval. Number two, All grant requests received by published deadlines will be analyzed and summarized by the Finance Committee, then reported to the Board for action. Grant requests and required documents must be submitted within the established guidelines.
Okay, thus completes the first reading of the constitutional amendments. Thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Lisa, also for producing a few Braille copies, which are available at the registration desk. See you on Saturday afternoon.
Well, this is a switch. We're way ahead of schedule.
Oh, you want more amendments?
Pardon? Well, I don't know if they're ready. She's ready. Oh, let's do some door. Let's do some door prizes. Yes, Linda. To Shannon. She's back, clear in the back. She needs a mic.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. So how many are we? Do you want me to do right now?
Oh, let's do three. Let's do three.
Oh, okay. Well, all right, I got two ready. So Mika told me that I had to give away cash with these, but then Cindy said not to, so no cash for these first ones, but they're still really great prizes.
Thanks, microphone away.
Okay, so first of all, we're going to do a mini Magna Bloom 150-watt grow light from the Snohomish County Council of the Blind, which was donated by Indoor Garden and Lighting. It's like if you wanted to grow some plants inside, that's what you got. Yeah, I am not here to tell you what to grow inside. So the lucky greenhouse winner today, and you must be present to win, is Judy Wilkinson.
Judy, she may be in exhibits.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So am I pulling out another name?
Yep, pull another name.
All right.
Well, exhibitors aren't, you know.
How about Adina Pearl Thomas? All right.
It's this big, giant thing.
Make it bloom. All right. And then now I'm going to give away this travel coffee mug and water bottle with this with a logo on it that says For Imprint. I don't know who that's from, but they... For Imprint. Oh, okay. It's from Cindy. Excellent. And the winner is... Megumi Tanaka.
Is she in the room?
She is.
All right.
Yay.
All right. All right.
You won a... Okay.
And then...
Got one more.
One more.
One more.
So this is this, it's a, all right, so this is a 1,000-piece puzzle that comes in a little tiny mini suitcase looking box. I don't know where that came from either, but looks pretty cool.
That came from us too.
Oh, okay.
Came from Snohomish County.
Snohomish. Terry Atwater, are you in the room?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
All right, those are your three door prizes. There'll be more.
Yep, stay tuned. There will be more. Okay. We Are Community is a really good theme. And to talk to us this morning about how you count, be counted, and learn what's being done to ensure that all are counted in the 2020 census, please help me welcome Sue Meldazy. She is the 2020 Census Coordinator with the Office of Financial Management. Sue.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate this invitation. And it's an opportunity for me to get out and get the word out, and this is what we're trying to do. So in today's presentation, I wanted to break it down into six sections, give you a background on the census, what the census means to Washington State, the details about the 2020 census. It's different than the other ones, and I'll give you some background on that. The challenges that we're facing, what we're doing statewide, and then what you can do. And near the end, if you have questions, I'll be glad to answer them. And if I can't, I will get the answers to you. So just a little bit of background. The U.S. Constitution requires a count of everyone in the land every 10 years. That's called the decennial census. And it's actually in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2. So the first census was in 1790, so that was 229 years ago. And the next census is April 1st, 2020. So April 1st is an important day to remember, that census day. And responding to the census is required by law, and also it's our civic duty. And actually, there are penalties for not responding. It's up to $5,000 if you don't respond or you give incorrect information. So the good news is that these penalties have only been imposed twice, and the courts did not uphold them. So don't panic, but realize it is a civic duty. So the U.S. Census Bureau, that's in the Department of Commerce, they conduct the decennial census. And then in between the 10 years, they do updates with the population estimates and what's called the American Community Survey. So maybe some of you have received this 32-page survey. It asks you everything about your house and so on and so forth. The decennial census is much shorter. So the whole goal of the census is to count everyone once, only once, and in the right place. So this is a very important concept because it really impacts your community. The census data is used to redraw electoral boundaries, so that affects your political representation at the federal, state, and local levels. It's used to distribute federal funds to and state funds for health care, education, highways, rural assistance programs. It's used for planning. They're always using population data, which is a big portion of the census data. Where are you going to put the school? Where should roads go? Where do we put the hospital? Things like that. And then also to inform business decision making. If you want to come into a community and build a business, you kind of have to know the demographics. Who are the customers? What's their age? What's their race? So on and so forth. So at a state level, the census has a tremendous impact. Like federally, they distribute over $880 billion a year to the states. In 2016, we received in Washington State $16.7 billion. So that's $2,319 per person. So every single person in this room is worth $2,319 on census day. And over 10 years, multiply that by 10, you're worth $23,190. So think about that. If we miss 100 households, that is an impact of $5.8 million on state funding. And this is funding for health, education, housing, rural assistance, bridge and highway planning. And I'll just give you a little example. In rural assistance, census data was used to build a fire station in Assotin County. census data is used for irrigation projects across the state. So it's very, very important that we get a good count and an accurate count in our state. So one thought, I just want to give you a little story. We don't think about census data so much in emergencies. But remember a couple of years ago, and you probably heard on the news, there were fires in Chelan County. And they went through and destroyed a lot of the county. So when things like this happen, FEMA comes in and tries to provide, you know, support to the people. And they knew how many parcels of land were there. But the people hadn't been the best in necessarily filing their census data, so they didn't know how many people. And so when they went to coming for assistance, they said, well, you know, we don't have record of all these people being here. So they're at the point now where they're thinking of having the fire department even do their own census to prove that those people were there. So it's very important that you get counted. It can affect you in ways that you least expect. So I'll go on now to just a few details about the 2020 census. First of all, the census is counted by household, and so the big thing that has to happen is an accurate database. So we've been working on that at the Office of Financial Management for a couple of years, and in the office that I work in, we are the keeper of the state map and all the state addresses. So we submitted our entire database to the federal government. They came back and challenged about, and in our database, the first submission, we sent it in. They came back and challenged about 65,000 addresses. We went through the entire database and proved those addresses were actually in existence. And now I think we're just down to maybe a couple of hundred that they're disputing. So it's a very, very detailed process. But we have to make sure we get all the households and addresses right. Then we have special processes for non-traditional houses, like university housing. If your child is in university on census day, then they will be counted. If they're in a residence, they'll be counted by the university. If they have their own apartment in their college town, they need to fill it out. You don't claim them like you would on your taxes. Now, if they're not living at home on census day, they fill it out where they are. The homeless, we have special processes to count the homeless, such as where they, soup kitchens, Salvation Armies, the different places where they receive their services. And senior centers, anyone, prisons, they all have special ways to be counted. So this is some of the processes that are used in the 2020 census. Now, this census is going to be very different. It is mainly online self-response. So this will require on everyone to take that responsibility on and make sure that they use their smartphone, their tablet, or their computer to fill out the census. Most of the households are going to receive an invitation in the mail. The census workers will go around. If you have a post office box, you're not going to get an invitation. The census worker will come around to your home. Or if your area is affected by a natural disaster, which I hope does not happen, then the census workers will go around. And in some remote areas and some of the tribes, they have the choice on whether they'll actually have someone count them in person or have someone come door to door. The main thing that we have learned from the Census Bureau is that it will be fully accessible. So if you have screen readers, you'll be fine. There will be no paper questionnaire in Braille that we know of at this point. However, you will be able to phone in and complete the census by talking to, hopefully, a real person. That's what we're hoping, and we're hoping there won't be huge amount of bureaucracy to get to that real person, but you'll be able to call in and fill it in that way also. So I'll give you a couple of details. In March of 2020, you're going to get an invitation in the mail. So it's really important that you have someone watch for that invitation. It's not going to be junk mail. And that invitation will have a code on it. And that code will be the code you use to go in and respond. Now, if you don't have the code, you can still go in. But that's your first invitation. And that's going to come out between March 12th and March 20th. So the middle of March, start looking for it. They'll be spreading this out day over the day, so there's not a lot of backup at the post office and online also. Then there'll be a reminder a week later. If you still haven't responded by the end of March, there'll be a reminder postcard. If you still haven't responded by April 1st and April 8th, there'll be a reminder letter and a paper questionnaire will go out. And by the end of April, if you still haven't responded, there'll be another postcard, and then they follow up in person. So they're trying very hard to get everybody to do it online. The actual questionnaire is not long. It's only 10 questions, take about 10 minutes, and it asks your name, your sex, your age, of each of the people living in your home, the relationship of the people living in your home, your race or ethnicity, and it asks you if you own or rent, and also a contact number. So it's not a complex form to fill out. They are sort of breaking down race and ethnicity a little differently. So if you are of Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin, you'll be able to identify kind of your background. Like if you came from El Salvador, the Dominican Republic, you have the space to fill that out. That's also true according to your race. So it used to be the census, you were either Caucasian or other, and everyone was thrown into the other category. But now it's broken down into white, and then you can identify your background if you're like German or Irish or whatever. Black or African American, you can also identify the location of, let's say it was Jamaican, Haitian, Ethiopian, or whatever your origin is. If you're American Indian or Alaska Native, you will be able to identify your tribe. And then you have all the other different nationalities, and then some orientation on where, like a location of where you came from. So if you are a Pacific Islander, you could say you came from Fiji or one of the islands. And if you're another race, there's a spot for that also. The paper questionnaires, it'll be in English and Spanish. The internet will be in 12 non-English languages as well as English. So these languages are Spanish, Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean, Russian, Arabic, Tagalog, Polish, French, Haitian Creole, Portuguese, and Japanese. Also, phone self-response will be in these 12 languages. There's also another glossary of 56 languages that you would be able to have somebody help a person who spoke one of these other 56 languages identify some of the terms that were in the census. So April 1st comes along, and you've gotten your invitation, and you're ready to respond. Here's the bottom line. You count yourself where you live and sleep most of the time on April 1st. So if you're moving on March 31st, then you're going to count yourself at your old address. On April 1st, if you're in your new house, you count yourself at that address. So that's the bright line. And it's up to the person answering the census to make sure everyone in the household is included. So if you've rented out a room to a student, make sure that student's included, even if they're not part of your family. If you've got the upstairs of your garage as an apartment, then you count everybody in that apartment. They're not going to get a separate invitation. So that's a very important thing to remember as that time comes. So let's talk about safety and security. Your census responses are safe, secure, and protected by law under Title 13. Census information on an individual cannot be released for 72 years. So that's a long time. So if you are into ancestry or you're sort of researching your family history, if you find anything on your ancestors, it's because it's 72 years or older. So until then, data on all individuals is aggregated and only statistically released in aggregated form. That's an important thing to remember, and I think there's a lot of fear about that, but you're not going to find out. Nobody's going to find out Sumel Daisy lives at this address until I am long gone. A census tract, for example, has 2,500 households. You will see demographics for census tracts, so the average age, and so on and so forth about a census tract, but you're not going to find out who lives there. And this is a very important thing to remember. The Census Bureau will not and cannot share your responses with any court, any government agency, the FBI, the CIA, ICE, or the Department of Homeland Security. This is of a great concern, especially for undocumented individuals. Also, the Census Bureau will never email you. They will never ask you for your full Social Security number. They're never going to ask you for your mother's maiden name or your bank account information or money or anything on behalf of a political party. They will never ask to come into your home. They may knock on your door when they're if you've not responded, but they're not going to ask to come into your home. And they will never threaten you with arrest if you do not comply. So one of the fears that I think we have at OFM and the Census Bureau is there are scammers out there. If this happens, contact the state attorney general, and this information is on our website, or go to the Census website, and they have a lot on what to do to avoid fraudulent activity. So with all of those safeguards in place, this is what we're facing on the challenges that we're facing in 2020. Some people are just hard to count. They may be mobile. They're experiencing homelessness. They live in gated communities. They're hard to locate, and they want to remain hidden. For example, in the Okanagan Valley, I was just talking to DNR the other day. They have a whole community. They call them blue tarp people. And these are people that move up there. They want to get away. They don't want to be found. They buy blue tarps and make tents and make a home way out in the land. I was just met a lady I spoke at the food bank convention over in Kennewick a few months ago. And her job is she takes food out into the remote parts of Grays Harbor County. People are armed and living out there, don't want any contact with society or anti-government. It's going to be hard to count those people. The only thing we're going to have are administrative records for them. So we have some unusual individuals who are living in different parts of Washington that are hard to locate. We also have the hard-to-persuade group. They're basically suspicious of government, and they, for lots of reasons, up to the point of maybe being anti-government. And so, for example, I have a friend. Her father's a big orchard owner. And I told her I was working for the census, and she said, oh, well, you know, I'm not filling that out. And, you know, why do I need that? And sort of starting to give me a bad time. And so I said, well, do you like using Highway 97 to get your apples down to Wenatchee so they can get shipped over to Japan? Do you like that? Yeah, I need Highway 97. I can't get my goods to market. Exactly. You can't get your goods to market if you don't have roads. And if you don't have roads, if we don't get federal funding to help with this, with our roads, we can't keep up that infrastructure. And our federal funding is based on census data. So when I told her that, the lights went on. She said, okay, I'll fill it out. So sometimes it's very important to understand how important this data is to you and your community. We have the hard to interview folks, language barriers, low literacy, lack of internet. And then we have the people that are just forgotten, children. You know, if you have a baby on March 31st and, you know, you're up all night, you forget to fill out the census, that child doesn't statistically exist for 10 years. So that's something to think about. And then we have our documented and undocumented immigrants. We're also just concerned about an undercount. There's a lot of fear and distrust of government right now. There's a lot of level of apathy, like it won't matter to me, so why should I bother? There's a very complicated information scene. It would be easy to sow misinformation, and we are going to be vigilant on that. We have limited internet access in some areas. And then the federal government cut the funding for the census. They've done tests, but they haven't done as many tests as they said they would. They don't have as much swag or advertising as they said they would, or as many people. In 2010, we had the most accurate census we've ever had. But remember, we'd had the crash in 2009 and 8 and 9. So there were a lot of people looking for jobs. But in now, it's a tight job market. The census is having a hard time hiring, and there aren't going to be as many people for follow-up. They're actually on a major recruitment campaign right now to try and get people to work. So if you know anybody that has a good background, you have to pass their background test, and they want a part-time job, send them that way. They're even taking people with felonies as long as they weren't violent felonies. So they're desperate for people right now. So what are we doing about this? So first time in the history of the state, the Washington State Legislature has appropriated money for the census. In 2018, it was $500,000, and that hired Lisa and I and got everything going. Not that we're making great money. I'm not making $500,000, just so I'd let you know that. But this year, the census, the legislature appropriated $15 million, and that money's going out to grassroots organizations throughout the state to try and get them to reach these historically hard-to-count communities. We're trying to create awareness and mobilize resources, organize them, educate people, dispel the myths, and build a giant grassroots movement that'll culminate on April 1st, Census Day. And so the first thing that we did is Governor Gary Locke has formed a statewide complete count committee. And there's representatives on that committee that appointed by the governor from business, the legislature, nonprofits, cities, counties, all your sort of major political players. Also philanthropies and the nonprofits in the rural areas, East and Western Washington. We have philanthropy and nonprofits that have started a census equity fund, and they've been giving out grants to small groups. And we have cities and counties and linguistic groups that have formed complete count committees, and they're popping up all over the state. We've got over 45 of those right now. At the state level, I am coordinating and mobilizing. The governor, my directive from the governor is to mobilize all the cabinet-level agencies. So there's 54 of them, and small and large, and I'm in the process of mobilizing those agencies now. And I'm also inviting the other elected officials to join this movement, and we're on a roll. I just spoke to DNR yesterday, so I'm really happy with this. One of the things that we are doing is we have a lot of we have a website, we have posters, pens, swags, and we've put a toolkit together. I want to recognize Liddell Lockwood for her work on that. She participated, and that was great. And so we have all the stuff ready for people to send out communications, community newsletters, social media, everything you want. You're free to use that, and it's on our website. So what can you do? Well, I think the first thing you can do is inform yourself. We have a website, www.ofm.wa.gov/2020census. All of our website is all of our websites, the feds and us, are accessible. Sort of do a scan of your community and figure out who might have difficulty or be afraid, what can be done to overcome those obstacles and help them. Make an inventory of all your mailing lists, newsletters, recurrent communications, and reach out to those people. You can join other groups and work with them. You can ID places where people could go and fill it out. And you can recruit and educate volunteers. In January, I will be available to come and speak to all of your chapters and help you educate also. And if you're having trouble getting help that you might need to help people fill this out, then please let us know. On our website, and you can look at, when you look at it, you'll see it's got a lot of good resources. What we did was take everything the Census Bureau has and tons of stuff and break it down into what you need to know. So we've got background information and resources. We also have maps that are accessible for you to look at. You can look at your county, and you can find out the areas that are hard to count. So if you have any questions, you can contact me, and my name's Susan.Meldazy, that's M-E-L-D-A-Z-Y, at ofm.wa.gov, and I will be happy to help you. Are there any questions? Yeah. Okay, I'll go slower on my email. Okay, Susan, S-U-S-A-N dot Meldazy, M-E-L-D-A-Z-Y, at O-F-M dot W-A dot G-O-V.
We have time for a couple of questions.
I have a question. Did I misunderstand, or did you say you do call people and do the census over the phone?
No, you...
Oh, good, because I get so many calls from fraudulent Social Security, I was worried that could be confused.
No, I'm sorry if that wasn't clear. You can phone into a census phone line and fill it out that way.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure if I had misunderstood you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, I was curious. You said that people could call in and that the form was accessible. I was wondering, would that be one of the, you know, because there's a lot of people who are good with technology here, a job that a blind person can do as one of the temp jobs?
That's a great question. I actually don't have an answer to that question, but what I could do is find out and get back to you. I'll send the answer back to Cindy. And so the question is, could a blind person, you mean answer one of the phones at the census center?
Yes.
I will contact the census, one of the U.S. Census partnership specialists, and see if those jobs are available. I don't know. They probably have localized call centers, and not sure there would be one here in Washington. It may be in another state. But that is a very good question. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Wait just a minute.
I got a question here. I was wondering, this is Eric here from Seattle. I was wondering, to respond to your question regarding the census workers, well, that depends. That is an older organization, and if they, I don't see as to why it wouldn't be accessible. If they use standard web controls, I don't see why a blind person couldn't do this job. Because we need all to try to do something about blind people that want to work, that actually want jobs, because I don't know, and this is getting off topic here, but...
So do you have an actual question?
Do you have a question?
Oh, no.
Thanks for your comment. Yeah.
Question. So if you know of someone who might be interested in a job, where do they apply for the job? Whom do they contact?
They go to the U.S. Census Bureau. So you can go to our website, and we have got a little thing you can click on that takes you to U.S. Census jobs, and you have to apply directly to the Census Bureau. Now, I want to tell you, it's a bit of a long process. It can take up to 5 months before they clear you, but they may speed up this since we're kind of running out of time, but they have to do a background check, especially for people that are going door-to-door, and so that's kind of what takes the time. But if you're, you know, one of the problems they faced is people apply, they get a candidate, to get them through the background check, but that candidate couldn't wait for the job. They have to work. They can't wait 5 months. So this is the challenge. But I encourage you to go there, and I will contact the census rep for the state and ask them about opportunities for the blind. Any other questions? Oh, there's someone way in the back there. You can go. I don't have the Census Bureau one right on me. What I have is the Washington, our website, but we have a link on there to jobs. So you can go to www.ofm.wa.gov /... Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure you are all much more computer literate than I am. 2020 census. So it's a /2020 census. Okay. And what you'll see on the front page is you'll see some little buttons. The first one will say subscribe to email updates. The one in the middle says census jobs. Click on that and it'll take you to that. The next one over is toolkits, and those are all the toolkits that we've collected that if you want to send out information to people, it's pre-written for you, and you don't have to spend the time or do the research doing it. We've got a lot of stuff in there from nonprofits, our state toolkit, faith-based toolkits, whatever we could find to help you. Did everybody get that? Did I go slow enough on the writing? I can repeat it if you need it. You got it? Everybody's got it? Okay. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And if you have any questions, please contact me and let me know what I can do to help you. Thank you.
Okay, we have a little bit of time, so I will take announcements. So if you have an announcement you want to make, please stand so that Bruce can see who you are to bring you the microphone.
Okay, there's Daryl's also.
Yes, this is Josette here. I have some waste packs, or they're more commonly called fanny packs. They're large size. They're genuine leather. They have about 5 compartments. Note takers will fit in them, and they also have an area to put various cards. They are $50 each, and I'm in room 404, or I'll be carrying them around with me.
Okay. Thank you, Josette. Any other announcements?
Yes.
Who said yes? Well, raise your hand. I'm coming. Here we are.
For all those that don't know, we are the See's Candy Queen of the Northwest. So anyway, I brought some See's Candy with me, and I'm in room 1003. If you want some, it's $3 a bar.
And what do you have, Jenny?
Milk chocolate, dark chocolate, and extra dark.
Oh, yeah. All right. Any other announcements?
Here we go. Good
to see you. Madam President, this is Melissa Hudson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for that applause. I just have a quick question about the sound. Some of the microphones sound really distorted from where we're sitting up in the front here. Is that the actual sound of the room itself, or what's going on? Because it's really... For those out there in ACB Radio Land, somebody just yelled out, it's me.
That was your president, Melissa.
No, I'm just curious why that is, because it just sounds really distorted, especially your microphone, Denise.
Thank you. All right, any other announcements?
Yes.
Hold on.
Coming. Let me sneak through here.
I have chocolate-covered espresso beans, 2 for $1.
Two beans or two packages?
Two packages.
Well, yeah, we got to clarify that, you know.
I love you, too.
They're chocolate.
I know, but are they milk, dark, whatever?
Well, you'll have to go buy one and find out.
Go ahead.
All right, any other announcements?
Yes.
And this is Julie Harlow from PCAB. And Sarah, thank you for saying that. I guess we stood up at the same time. Kathy Wilson, as you guys all know, her, Lori Allison, a lot of members of PCAB do have the chocolate covered beans.
Okay,
so,
great.
Thank you.
Coming, Andy.
She just said that several of the members of the Pierce County Association have the coffee beans. So you can get them from people in that chapter.
This is Andy Arvidson. Tomorrow on an employment panel, we're going to hear from a company called Two Blind Brothers. They make some incredible and sell some incredible clothing. I have a Two Blind Brothers shirt on if anybody would like to check it out. It's 66% bamboo.
This is Amy Lurie Hildesheim, and I'm from I'm from the Yakima Council of the Vine, and we are doing the hospitality gel again as a fundraiser for us, and half the
Everybody listen up.
Half of the proceeds go to WCB. So I have for sale get out of free gel cards for $5 that must be purchased before hospitality. They're a one-time use. And we changed the rules. You only can go to jail if you're actually spending time in jail one time a night. So Friday and Saturday. You can pay $10 to put some in jail for 10 minutes, $15 for 15 minutes, and $20 for 20 minutes. If they want to get out early, it's half of whatever you paid for them to get out at half the time. Or they can match what you do. But we also have diplomatic immunity cards. And those cards that you can get, well, I'll have a I got to get your name on the list, means that you will not be participating. That means you don't want to be put in jail, and you cannot put anybody else in jail. So remember, it's a fundraiser, and we will see you at the hospitality tonight.
Great. Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Is that all the announcements? Okay. Stand up so that Bruce can find you, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here. Okay. This is Kim Moberg from the South Kitsap Council of the Blind. And we have two different raffle ticket things you can buy. We have a 50-50 raffle, and we have a gift card drawing. There are two gift cards. A $50 Starbucks and a $25 See's Candy gift card. They will be drawn at the banquet. Yes, and $1 each drawing or the 50-50 raffle. So either one, gift cards or the 50-50 drawing are each $1.
And that reminds me, if you are doing a raffle drawing at the banquet, you must let me know. And preferably not at the banquet. Any other announcements? Yes, Danette.
All right. Wait a minute.
Here comes Bruce. Can I ask
you that standing by?
Okay, at the exhibits at the GDUWS booth, you will see a collapsible kennel. It is all proceeds for this collapsible kennel will go to the Marlena Liebert Scholarship Fund. So that's.
Okay. Shannon, do you have one door prize? Oh, Shannon's got a door prize.
Trouble wants to win this door prize. So we're going to give away this one. I have to give it away because otherwise I'm going to be tempted to draw my name. And it is a set of Paul Mitchell products from Snohomish County that looks like there's shampoo and there's like some hair gel and some hairspray and looks like a really, really cool, lovely hair product. Oh, what happened to my sound?
Sometimes they come
out. Hello? There you go. All right. And the winner is, okay, Bertina Boyer. Are you in the room?
Aww.
No. Aww. Oh, no. I have to draw somebody else's
no.
name. How about Linda Muhammad? Are you in the room?
Oh.
This is the first time we're
Okay. First time or two. All right. Margie Conley? All right.
There is that.
Thank you, Shannon. Okay, it's now time for a break. We will break until 10:30. And when you come back, we will do another door prize. So you want to be in the room. And then we have, I think, what's going to be an interesting topic. So we will break until 10:30.